At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May of 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
You're out there, you're backing up your car there. Where are you going with the family? Oh, that's funny. You're going to IKEA? That's so weird because I haven't been to IKEA in years.
Oh, yeah.
I keep it real local. You know what I'm saying? Real local. Where are you going after that? Are you going to Pier 1? That sounds silly to me. Couldn't caught me dead in Pier 1. It's an inside joke with myself. Well, you have fun now. Any of you sick? And are you not feeling too good? You sure? Your mother's looking kind of big. She's not feeling too sick? Well, I'll be seeing you. Oh, I'll babysit any time. Don't you worry. All right. You betcha.
Oh, that's
I'll
great.
Be seeing.
That's perfect. That's your impression of a Wisconsin conversation, and you nailed it. That is a perfect example of what it is to live in Wisconsin. Wow. Okay.
Just constantly asking people if they're going to IKEA because Absolutely. You've got a house full of fucking human skin placemats.
It's the only kind. All right. Welcome to the show. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks, all the way from beautiful Toronto.
Oh my God, am I excited for today's episode. It's Ed Gein Day,
it's Ed Gein Day.
Put your hands together cause it's Ed Gein Day. If you're a big fat man, I want you to slap your titties against your belly.
Do that.
If you're a sexy woman, I want you to slap your tits against your belly.
Yeah.
Because Ed Gein always wished he could have done that.
Ed Gein, we're going all the way to beautiful Wisconsin. Plainfield, we'll be talking about that. That's 20 minutes outside of where I grew up in the wonderful Stevens Point.
Well, let's hear
now,
how...
Now, Ben, honestly, this is the only time in which anything that you remotely know innately can be useful to the show.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
You know how to pronounce these names, so you have to make sure that we're pronouncing them right.
Oh, I'll
because
nail
most
it.
Of these are all just fucking... Native American coughs.
They really are. We have a lot of the Chippewas and a lot of things like that. But if I say the Wisconsin, the name of a Wisconsin town, and you don't think it's right, you are wrong because that is my home state.
Yeah, yeah. Too many Verns in that state.
A lot of Verns, but can you have too many Verns? No, because you can never have too many people serving up camp-style lunches. That's what Verns
also,
do. They create an amazing Salisbury steak, and do you want some potatoes on the side? You're getting them.
This is real. This show is for the locals. I'm excited for this.
Yes.
Also, what I noticed in watching a lot of documentaries about Ed Gein, a lot of use of the surname Umpfer.
Umpfer and Vern. That was it was supposed to be Laverne and Shirley was supposed to be Umpfer and Vern, but they went with the more feminine route.
Yeah, because originally it cast a 400-pound hunchback.
Yes, Umpfer.
As Umpfer. And then when they got the when the executive producer threw up all over his suit,
right?
They changed it up and made it a woman.
Yeah. Umpfers don't make very good butlers because they block the door.
Yeah,
and butlers are supposed to escort people inside.
What I love about today's story is, of course, Ed Gein. We've kind of hopped around Ed Gein for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
We covered him a long time ago. But getting deeply
into his story. We read the book by Schechter.
Harold Schechter, yeah.
Harold Schechter, Deviant, which is incredible. It's very fun. And Ed Gein's story is incredibly fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it's a little different than other big hitters that we've covered because he's not a he's not like a pure predator.
No, he's a nice guy. If anything, he's a reverse grave digger.
No, you know, he's a grave digger, 100%. There's no reverse here.
He's a reverse putting people in grave. He takes them out. He tries to bring them back to life like that movie, like that TV show.
Grave robber. That's the word you're looking for.
Grave robber. That's what it is. Yeah. It's not like one of those movies where you film it backwards and then you play it forwards. Ooh, you know what I mean? So you make the effect look different. He was trying to eat some dead old women's pussies.
But I want to dispel a myth right up top. Ed Gein was not a cannibal.
No.
He was a purist.
Oh, by the way, just a little bit off topic, but so happy to see Jeffrey Dahmer trending on Twitter this week.
Isn't it great?
And I don't know if you guys have read those stories. We'll get right back to Gein, but of course Dahmer's a Wisconsin guy as well, kind of connected. I didn't realize Dahmer was such a jokester. He had something. Did you see he had the...
I don't believe it.
He had the Cannibals Anonymous Club. He wrote that on a sign and put that into his in his prison cell so no one would bother him, but that is just good prison humor.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It seems like it's a prank that happened to him. It seems like once that happens in prison, a good like schoolyard prison prank would it be like take the word like cannibal and slap it on his back, you know, like I'm a cannibal, kick me. I think he was a target.
Well, Wisconsinites are full of joy, full of laughter, and full of humor, and we'll get back to Ed Gein, who was always smiling.
Mm-hmm. But one more thing, literally always smiling because he had a fucking mental defect.
Oh, come on, leave him alone. He had a nice hat.
Number one, Ed Gein is not a cannibal. That is true.
He is not.
Second of all, what I love about this story is that, again, it's just this example of that the boogeyman is real.
Yeah.
That when it's that house out in the middle of nowhere, when you read about when we're going to cover like kind of where Ed Gein lived, every kid in the neighborhood knew that that was the haunted house. They would dare each other to go and like ring his doorbell and like run away because old Ed Gein would come out and be like, "You want to come inside and play with these apples I made? I made my own apples." And they're like, "How do you make your own apples, Ed?" He's like, "They're just a bunch of hands."
Hand apples. I love a good hand apples, Bob. And for hand apples, that was a fun game you could play in the Gein backyard.
The other thing about Ed Gein would always say exactly what he was doing, but then with a laugh afterwards, joke.
That's what they always do.
Oh, yeah, man. And the other thing about Ed Gein, the lowest body count of any heavy hitter besides O.J. Simpson, this guy only had 2 murders, possibly 3, under his belt over a period of, I would say, 6 years, somewhere around there. But let's get...
Got an A for effort. You know what I mean? Because when you're your own Martha Stewart... That's something special. She runs an empire.
Today,
you know
what
I mean? But, you know, most of his stuff was stuff he could stick his dick through so he could pretend he had a vagina.
So if you have some super glue and some scissors around, all you need to do is find yourself 15 human nipples. And today on Martha Stewart, we're going to be making a human nipple belt. So stick around.
Martha, it seems like the biggest problem with the craft is getting all the nipples.
Yes. Yes, it's not easy. Today's episode isn't as simple as making a cake.
So we're gonna have to rob graves or kill women to get these nipples.
Bob, feel your chest right now.
Yeah.
No, you have no nipples. I stole them from you. The whole crew has lost their nipples. That's how good I am.
All right. So sit back in your chair made out of straps from fucking dead little girl.
Please don't have a chair made of dead little girls.
Get yourself a bowl that's made from the thumb bones of a homeless man. Stuff it full of sweet, sweet Wisconsin Jamaican grain. Put it in your head, and we're getting on a rickety old Ford driving down to Plainsfield, Wisconsin.
Plainfield, yeah.
All right, we're gonna start off with a reading from Harold Schechter's Deviant to really set the scene of what Plainfield, Wisconsin was like in the 1950s. For the most part, Wisconsin is a beautiful state. A lush, sprawling park, an endless expanse of bright green meadows and thickly wooded hills. It's not until you cross over into the South Central Plain area, 60 or so miles north of the capital, that you feel you've suddenly entered a different and far less hospitable world. Every part of the landscape seems bleak and ungiving. The grass looks parched. The sky, even on a perfect spring day, presses down on you, and the soil is a faded pink, the same sickly color that the makers of children's crayons used to call flesh. To some Wisconsinites, this flat and infertile section of the state is known as sand country. Others call it Wisconsin's great dead heart.
Well, now that's a little overdramatic, you know, because really, it's the heartland of America.
It's the great dead heart, Ben.
Oh, okay.
You come from the great dead heart of Wisconsin.
Huh, I didn't know that. We always pretend like it was alive.
Yeah, and it somehow traveled to the great dead heart of Ben Kissel.
Huh, isn't that something exciting? People like to go there.
Can I ask real quick, have you ever been to Plainfield?
Yeah, we used to go try to find his grave, but at that point, this was, you know, mid-90s, late-90s. It had already been so destroyed that they had just taken it away already at that point. And I think it's in some museum now somewhere.
Cool.
Well, the hometown of Ed Gein, Plainfield, seemed to exemplify the so-called great dead heart of Wisconsin. And
yes.
In fact, the state guidebook at the time characterized the town simply as just nondescript.
Right. Oh, I love to go to a nondescript place.
I also
for a vacation and I put paper bags on me and my family's heads, so it's all totally anonymous. And then all we do is drink water, and we stay there for about 4 hours, and then we leave.
That's literally what you would have to do in Plainfield, Wisconsin. I love the idea of the Wisconsin guide. Like there's some family going on a Wisconsin road trip. Oh, let's check out Plainfield. What's that all about?
Well, it says here it's got a mailbox, and it's got a guy who can. Oh, look at that. He can fart when you point at him.
Oh, isn't that something? That seems to be most town folks around that area.
Gotcha. That'll be a nickel.
That's a nickel. And a nickel goes far.
Well, the population in Plainfield never rose above 800. Most of the residents were just poor, struggling farmers. Even the name of the local body of water seemed to confirm this bare, hopeless nature. The settlers called it Sand Lake.
Yeah,
that just showed that they didn't understand water.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think they thought sand was water. They wanted to call it Water Lake, but they just got it all wrong.
No. We can't be calling it Water Lake. That's redundant. All right? Yeah. We got to call it something fun like Dirt Lake or Sand Lake.
But despite it being a barren and miserable place, it was still a close-knit, very prideful community, the kind of place where you'd have your annual Christmas pageants, your potluck dinners.
Yeah.
Big events attended by the entire town, including Ed Gein. So the Gein family, let's go way back and start with the patriarch of the Gein family. Let's start with George Gein, Ed's father.
Now, everybody knows that every good serial killer starts with a really strong father figure.
Oh, absolutely.
Somebody who really fucking guides their life and helps them.
A good, healthy family structure that encourages education and, assimilation into society.
Oh, of course. Well, Ed, George's entire family died when George was only 3 years old. They all died in a flash flood.
They legitimately were just going into a town in a cart. And it literally just started raining, and they just watched the water come.
Yeah,
I just think that what it comes down to is that the Geins just wanted to go.
I think that's true. And when you say flash flood, yeah, everything is slow.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
look at that there, baby that Gein. It's funny how it's like, it's getting higher.
It's higher.
What you doing to getting higher like that? I mean, hey, Betty Gein, why don't you go check and see if it's actually getting higher or if I just might. I got water on my glasses from when I was sucking out of the ravine.
Yeah.
Well, George grew up to be an utterly insignificant man, a drunk prone to bouts of anger and self-pity. And then there was the love of Ed's life, his mother, Augusta.
I gotta say this, even just him describing Augusta, I kind of fell in love with her.
Oh, Augusta's amazing.
She's close to 330 pounds of pure muscle.
Mm-hmm.
Tits like the front of a battleship.
Oh, yeah.
Face like Ernest Borgnine if he was also half cigar.
No. They said that she wasn't pretty. But she was a handsome woman.
She was a handsome woman. And in Wisconsin, it's a utilitarian society. That's good. That's what you want in a lady. A good stock, a strong, a good wide stance.
You want a woman that if a cow breaks its leg, she can just strap it to her back.
Exactly.
And drag it through a field.
Exactly.
She was a stern disciplinarian, self-righteous and domineering, completely...
Stop it, Marcus. I'm getting hard right now.
I know. Augusta.
Self-assured in every one of her beliefs. And these beliefs should be spread, she believed, and preached to every single person that she came into contact with. In other words, the classic evangelical Christian pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I mean, she was beyond judgmental, and she was one of those people that blamed all of the ills of the world on the harlots and the hussies that roamed the streets, tempting men into abominable sin or worse.
It's so weird because the women that are normally this type of judgmental are never like a size 3. You know what I mean? Like with like big bouffant blonde hair and like hourglass figure. They're pretty much always shaped like a refrigerator.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Sometimes you can get those skinny ones out there, but for the most part, they are, they look as if they've definitely given some swirlies to some girls they thought were whores.
Yeah, always that.
Yeah, look Could at you those. Imagine? Because that's the thing, is other women being so terrified of Augusta if she thought you were a whore. You're literally just going to like an office interview. Like you're just trying to get a job and you're wearing like a pantsuit and just like, you goddamn whore trapping around. Grabbing you by the ankles and snapping you like a towel.
That's what she does.
She believed that sex was a despicable act that should only be done to procreate. Mm-hmm. And even then, it was not to be enjoyed. In fact, Ed said, if we were meant to have sex, Ed said that she told him, if we were meant to have sex, the Lord would have made it enjoyable.
I want to watch her having sex with poor George. Oh, poor George. Oh, so I made you
But
some-
how I imagine that she did it is that she would get him hard and then pull his dick back behind his balls.
Right.
And fuck him from behind into her own vagina.
Oh, don't you know? That's okay. Okay. Thank you, Augusta.
You just lay there and let me finish it myself.
You worthless piece of shit, George. You can't George even get hard for me.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, Wisconsin men are very, very nice because they outnumber women. It's like, you know, there's like 60%. At this point, it was probably even more like 70 to 30 or something. So they're so nice. And these women, they just do very, very mean-spirited things to these poor guys.
Oh, yeah. And the marriage was predictably horrific for every single person involved. George was constantly berated by Augusta. But you could also say that she might have some reason to berate him. He was almost an aggressively lazy drunk. And sometimes he would refuse to even speak for days on end.
He's been shell-shocked. He's so torn down. He's so beaten down. He's just like, he's completely resigned to his fate that he's going to die in an easy chair.
Yeah. But
the
I mean,
the way they courted each other is also like a straight up. She just chose him because he was tall.
Yeah. Oh, that's what
she was obsessed with, the fact that he was tall and had a strapping good, like, because he had sort of like what she called a regal stance he was tall and broad chested, but he was never a good worker. He had, because basically when his family died, it set the tone for his whole life, and everybody told him, like, you should have died with him.
She chose him with, well, sitting in the corner of some smoky bar with chewing tobacco in her lips, spitting into a spittoon. She looked at him. She's like, yeah, that's the one. That's the one I'm taking home. And then he was just so thrilled a girl was talking to him, and then he had no idea that that was going to be the worst situation of his life.
Oh, my God. And he was one hell of a drunk, although she was completely sober all the time. And in fact, when he came home drunk, she would start berating, you're just a drunk, George, you're just a drunk. And he'd start flailing at her with open hands, just hitting her again and again. She'd fall to the floor and just keep hurling the insults. And after each beating, which beating... I mean, that's
Augusta could take care of
Augusta,
herself.
And they described it as flailing with open hands. So it was pretty much just a slap fight. And then after he finished with her, she would just get up, get down on her knees, and just pray for his death.
Always find that something like this, it's like, I understand we had rough Christmases too,
sure,
in my family. Like, we were very, it was a very intense household. But I would say that, it's just like, not great for kids.
No, not ideal
right?
for
Am
kids.
Am I going out on a limb?
No, no. I think it's no. safe to say when George comes home drunk and has the slap fight with Augusta, that's not the best evening for a child's life.
And then she's got to pray for death. You got to pray for his death while Ed's just
Dear Lord
there
Jesus Christ. I mean, I want to hear that prayer so bad.
Well, nevertheless, in 1901, Augusta allowed George to implant his seed in her musty, unwelcoming hole.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I saw that you wrote that down there in the outline. Musty, unwelcoming hole.
I think it's a pretty accurate representation.
I don't know if it
What
would...
if you took off her underpants,
right.
and she had the sweetest, greatest vagina on the face of the planet,
honestly.
And it drove George insane.
It's possible. It's possible. Yep. That's what she's protecting all these years.
Yep. On January 17th, 1902, 2 days before my birthday, Augusta gave birth to Henry Gein, the oldest of the Gein boys.
One.
Yes. Well, I mean, they both stayed single until the day they died, but...
Which is really creepy, yeah. living with your parents until your early 40s.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, not for Plainfield. That's pretty standard.
Yeah,
pretty typical.
I suppose so. 4 years later, Augusta decided she could try again because she wanted a girl, someone that was free from the sins of man.
Uh-huh.
She allowed George into her bed once more, and poor Edward Theodore Gein was created. Yep, Eddie Teddy.
Sweet Eddie Teddy was born.
Teddy's created with drunken PBR-riddled sperm as Augusta stared blankly into George's eyes. Literally, he's personification of born into the world with hate.
And I also love this sentence from Deviant. And Ed would not be sinful. He would not be like every other man in this abominable world.
Mm-hmm.
He would be pure. He would be good. But what he would eventually become... would shock the world in ways we had never thought possible.
Actually, that's not from Deviant. Those are my words.
Wow, good
That is exciting. But he wouldn't be like everybody else. He wouldn't be like your normal fat Wisconsin farmer. He was different.
He was different.
And we're talking about Bruce Jenner. Oh, my God, the transitioning that Bruce is going through. And I love that. And if you're trans, we support you 100%. But no one was there for Ed.
No.
I want to wear human skin, he said. And everyone mocked him and made fun of him.
Well, we'll get this probably later more into in the second part of this series. But this is very appropriate that we're doing this episode during Bruce Jenner's coming out. Because, I mean, all Ed wanted to be was a lady.
He did.
So what I think is that, you know, again, if you're trans, yes, we support you entirely, but if, just go buy a wig.
Yes. I mean, if you are trans, again, don't go Buffalo Bill with it. No.
Don't. Yeah. You don't got to anymore.
No.
Save. Ed literally had to, in a way.
In a way. You, however, have the option to save up and have the surgery, the gender reassignment surgery. It's 2015. You have that choice now.
Get out of Plainfield. If right now, I'm going to say this right now, if you live in Plainfield, get the fuck out of Plainfield.
Or stick around. You never know when the economy is going to start coming back. You know, Plainfield's a beautiful place.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod.
Well, Ed worshipped his mother from the very beginning. He described her as pure goodness, and tears would well up in his eyes anytime he spoke of her.
You know, I couldn't help but think of North Koreans when they speak of Kim Jong-un or In or Un or Il. He worshipped her to that level, though.
Yeah.
This was the end-all, be-all. This was God to Ed Gein, which is very interesting.
Yes, she was his savior, but he seemed to fail her at every single turn. His first memory was of a staircase when he was a toddler. He lost his balance at the top of the staircase, as toddlers do. Mm-hmm. And as he fell, he felt the crushing grip of his mother on his arm. She picked him up and just started screaming at him, shaking him. He knew he had done something horribly wrong, but just couldn't figure out what. All he knew was that his mother had saved him.
But you know that was George's fault. Augusta was like, "Where's Ed, George?" And George was like, "I put him on top of the staircase to play." George's fault.
She's also got Henry Gein, who's just trying to crawl out of the window. And also, she's got fucking George tied to a rope to her belt so he doesn't run out the door. I think legitimately everyone was trying to kill themselves.
I think so. I think there was definitely some self-conscious or some subconscious suicide going on.
I think so. So another incident is that when Eddie was 7,
this is just a sad story.
This is a super sad story. Ed's mother charged him to walk just a block, only a block away to buy bread.
I will say blocks in Wisconsin are much longer than they are here in this city. A block is like just from this rock to that rock, but that could be a mile, 2 miles. There's no rules.
That is true. But somehow, during the walk from the house to the bakery, Ed managed to just lose all of the money that his mother had given him.
I was just walking down the street, and I saw this dog. And I was like, oh, that's a funny little dog over there. You know what you could do? You could turn them little leg bones into, like, I've seen what them Chinamen use for forks and spoons. You could just, where's my money? It's from money.
Maybe he planted it. Maybe he thought he was going to make a money tree. Kids are fun.
So he came back empty-handed, sobbing and terrified. She looked down at him and said in a quiet, heartbroken, bitter, bitter voice.
You dreadful child, only a mother could love you.
Oh, no. Oh, it
was
much...
her quiet voice. No, it was probably like,
you dreadful child. Only a mother could love you.
Oh, Augusta.
That's cute. I love Augusta. I wish she was my mom.
I gotta tell you, reading Deviant, and if you're reading Deviant and trying to flirt with people, I feel like there is a there is a fucking problem that, like, working through in my body. You know what I mean? Where I just keep seeing, like, flashes of Augusta.
Right.
Whenever I'm talking to a woman.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh, no. That's
what
I
you
want.
Are. When you go on dates, you're supposed to break down walls. You're building them up, Henry, reading things like that in public.
Oh, yeah. And there's actually another book about Ed Gein that I also took some information from. It's called Psycho. It's not as good as Deviant, but if you're an Ed Gein fanatic as I am, it's worth the read.
Why aren't there any books just called Farmer? You know, friendly guy around town. Psycho and Deviant. These are very leading titles. Artist
might
work.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, they're very judgmental.
I think so.
And I can't believe, the kind of judgment heaped upon this guy.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, yes, he had a fucking cardboard box full of salted pussies that he would drape over his own dick and balls. But he also was a son. And a brother.
He was a son and a brother. We'll figure out what happened to his brother here in a second. But,
so Ed's first experience with death came around the same time as the bread incident. Not too long after Eddie's birth, his mother took complete control of the family's destiny and opened her own grocery store in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
This is also interesting. We're going to find later on with the only two victims that Ed has that he loves local businesswomen. His mother was a very solid businesswoman and a go-getter. Like, that's why it's like when it came down to basically the whole family had to rely on Augusta Gein because she was the only one getting shit done.
She was, and this was not an easy thing for a woman to do. This is the 50s, maybe the early 60s at this point.
Oh, no, this is 1912, 1910.
Oh, when she opened the supermarket, it was 1910?
Yeah, it was the...
Holy shit. So you think about what a woman's role was in society then, and this chick goes down to La Crosse, Wisconsin, your typical traditional Christian place. No one wanted a woman to own a supermarket, and that's how strong Augusta was.
Oh,
she literally had to take the supermarket from the man who owned it before by putting him in a headlock.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think I can't choke you to death with my own tits?
Exactly. She did everything like one of those the glow wrestlers, gorgeous ladies of wrestling people.
Just get hard thinking about it.
So there was a building behind the store where the family slaughtered the animals.
Can I read a passage from Deviant about this?
Please.
Behind the meat and grocery store was a windowless wooden outbuilding which he was forbidden to enter, Ed. As a result, it exerted a tremendous fascination. Ed had seen animals being led into the rear of the shack, big-eyed heifers and grunting pigs. And on several occasions, he had heard a fearful bellowing coming from behind its sagging boards. Curiosity blazed in him. One day, when his parents weren't around, he went out through the back door of the grocery and stepped quickly to the prohibited place. The door was open a crack, enough for him to peer inside. There, hanging upside down from a chain in the ceiling, was a slaughtered hog. His father stood to one side of the animal, holding it steady, while his mother slipped a long-bladed knife down the length of its belly, pulled open the flaps, reached inside, and began to work at the glistening ropes of its bowels, which slid out of the carcass and into a large metal tub at her feet. Both his parents had on long leather aprons spattered with blood. He must have made some sort of noise. Oh, jeez, Louise.
Something like that.
Because his mother turned completely around to look at him. And for the rest of his life, he remembered the moment with an uncanny clarity. The dangling beast, its carcass split open, its guts slopping onto the ground. Mm-hmm. His mother standing beside it, blood and slime smeared down the length of her body.
Yeah, I love it. And that actually reminded me, we used to go to a great, one of my favorite strip clubs in Wisconsin was called the Slaughtered Hog. And my favorite, my second favorite was, of course, the Dangling Pig. Or the
I love the Dangling Pig because of the trapeze act.
Yeah.
My strippers have a lot of theatricality like mixed in.
You come down to the Dangling Pig Tuesdays, free beer from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m.
You know, and thank God the tragedies ended. Yeah. And the tragedies finally ended once they fully supported that ceiling. Because, yeah. I mean, the Wisconsin stripper.
Oh, my God. Mm. Well, we won't get into that. That's a whole episode, Wisconsin strip clubs. But it's interesting to me that they didn't want to watch, they didn't encourage him to watch the slaughter of the animals. They did have some sympathy to the idea that this would scar a child.
He was, because that's what they said. One of the more, they talk about how when he was growing up, he had a lot of feminine qualities, which his father fucking hated.
Yeah.
Giorgio hated how attached he was to his mother. He thought he was a mama's boy, which is the truth. It's what he was.
Yeah, the definition of it, yeah.
But he would cry horribly all the time at any sort of provocation. He was very weak. He was very sensitive.
Yeah.
A little too sensitive.
Well, George, you know what I mean? If George was just more of a father figure, I think the whole house structure probably could have worked out a little bit better.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. There were a lot of mistakes made in the Gein household.
Right.
So in 1913, Augusta decided that the Geins would be farmers. So the small, miserable family bought a homestead outside of Plainfield, Wisconsin, the same home that Ed would eventually do all of his horrific deeds. The appeal of the house in Augusta's mind was the extreme isolation, as she had come to regard La Crosse, Wisconsin, where the family had previously lived, as a modern-day Sodom, where hussies ruled the streets.
Yep, gals there, they showed a little ankle, you know. It was ridiculous.
It's 1913. How much skin could they have shown?
Well, they can show a lot. There's definitely a lot of clothing that has to cover it up.
There's a lot of surface area that could be exposed.
Sure. I love the supermarket, though. That would be crazy to be, know the story and then to have actually shopped in the Gein family supermarket.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
very interesting.
Yeah. So,
yeah, just fucking Ed just sitting there with a steak on his head, just being like, have you seen my new hat? I think it's fun. It's keeping the sun out of my eyes. And I keep getting all this blood in my mouth.
Oh, good kid.
So, really, Augusta didn't really care all that much about Henry Gein. Ed was her project. Ed was her special little guy. And Augusta thought that out in the wilderness, he'd be safe from the influence of all of the harlots. The house, it was just surrounded by nothing but meadows, marshlands, just little clumps of dying trees, an acre upon acre of pale, sandy soil.
That's exactly what Ed needs. He needs isolation.
Desolation. Yeah. Isolation. Loneliness.
Should he be around educated people who might try to help him with his mental problems? No. Put him near the bushes. Put him near the
specific. This is one of the specific stories, too, where a little dose of Lady Gaga.
Oh, my God. Again, yes. Where was her in her meat dress? Speaking of people who like to wear animal carcasses for clothes.
Mm-hmm. Ed was not a happy child, nor was he particularly well-liked by any of his classmates.
By who? By his three classmates?
800 people. I don't know. That's probably a class of like 25 or something.
Maybe 25.
I grew up in a town of like 300-400, and I had 12 people in my class.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, he had a few.
All right.
Yep.
So I would also put it this way. Yeah, so this is also from Deviant. The problem is that he would try to watch how people act and imitate their behavior.
Right.
But from the point of view of his peers, there was definitely something a little different about Eddie Gein. At no point in his life, not at any rate, until his simmering psychosis erupted into full-blown dementia, did anyone perceive that he might be a dangerously disturbed individual. And in fact, it would have taken a fairly sophisticated eye to see in young Eddie's behavior, his social incompetence, for example, and increasing isolation. But there were things about Eddie that certainly struck his schoolmates as peculiar. The way his eyes kept shifting around whenever he talked to you. The odd, lopsided grin he always wore, even when the conversation had to do with the deer hunting accident that killed Eugene Johnson or old man Beckley's heart attack. His habit of laughing at weirdly inappropriate times.
Yeah.
So he were listening to some strange private joke that no one else could hear.
Wow, that's amazing that you just mentioned the only two ways to die in Wisconsin. A deer hunting accident or a heart attack.
Or a serial killer. So the other thing about Ed is that in addition to all of his behavioral problems, he also had a slight physical defect. His left eye drooped down just a little bit further than his right.
Because he had a very heavy mole on it. And they called it his saggy baggy eye. And then next thing he knows, all those people are fucking furniture. So watch what you say when you're a kid, guys.
Absolutely, yeah. He did get some perfect revenge on any of the bullies that he had to deal with in school.
Oh, definitely.
No, it was just poor old women.
Yeah, really, for the most part. He doesn't seem that strange to me, though, yet at this point. I mean, I think he could be saved still.
He definitely could have been saved. I mean, I was a pretty sensitive kid. Sure. You know, I would cry quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But any time that someone made fun of his eye, he'd cry and blubber about it for days and days. And that was another word that they used quite a bit in Deviant, blubber.
They didn't have any sugary snacks or good television shows to distract him. There was no Saved by the Bell. We couldn't live through Kimmy Gibbler. You know,
there was a lot of people that, I mean, I remember kids like this in school all the time. We were talking about this before, and you talk a little bit about this in Sex and Other Human Activities, which I don't listen to, but I saw the title. I just can't listen to Jackie.
I know.
It's very interesting because when I was a kid growing up, I was friends with all the weird kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it was. So you would have been friends with Ed Gein.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very difficult because you go to school, you be all shifty-eyed, you're kind of stinky, and you're kind of odd, and then you go back to Augusta. So the education process it really stopped there once he got home.
And that's the reasons why people like Rick Ocasek learned how to play the guitar.
Love
this is how
that.
You get women. This is what you do. This is how you make friends. You got to acquire a skill.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did have a skill, I suppose.
I mean, it was a very isolating skill.
Yeah.
He couldn't really all the whittling of bones. It's hard to put on a resume. It's hard to put in a Tinder bio.
Well, yeah.
It worked for Marcus, but technically, I mean, he's got a charm about him.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure. I'm a little bit better looking than Ed Gein.
A little bit.
Yeah. So, Eddie, this guy, completely isolated, both emotionally and physically, unable to make any friends at school, and every other moment was spent in the company of, as you say, Ben, a drunk, bitter, abusive father and a domineering know-it-all mother who just constantly asserted that the world outside of the Gein farm was just a place of utter despair and sin. And
perfect soup for a killer.
It is.
Delicious serial killer soup. I love to hear it.
That's the thing. We're not talking. People used to call Plainfield little Las Vegas. You know, I mean, it was a wild town. They had a light, and
they had a whole stoplight.
They had one, and
I hear if you go look around a corner, you'll find they got three mailboxes.
Holy hell! I mean, it was going to the devil.
Oh yeah, and in fact, anytime Ed would just start to have the beginnings of a friendship at school, he'd come home and start telling his mother about it, because of course he told his mother about absolutely everything, and she would just, I mean, it would start with this just kind of low, let me tell you everything that's wrong with this kid. There's this thing that's wrong with him. There's this thing that's wrong with him. And oh, did you know his mother did this? And oh, did you know that her father did that? Mm-hmm. And then by the time she was done with her tirade, she was screaming in his face about the most innocent thing a kid can do is make a friend at school.
It's a nice thing for you to do if you're a child to make a friend at school, and good parents encourage such activity, and you know by the end of this rant, her titties were out and her face were sucking one of her nipples. Come to mommy,
Eddie.
This
is what you need, yeah.
Yeah. Do your friends have these big mustard cakes?
No, mother, they don't. They certainly don't. But one day I will. All over the house.
In that corner. In that corner, you know where you put the sugar? I'm putting nipples in the sugar.
So at least we can say that Ed celebrated the female body.
He was the most. We talk about a lot of these serial killers being very misogynistic, being very anti-woman. We cannot say Ed Gein was anti-woman.
Absolutely not.
No. He had problems with, like, the skull bones.
Yes.
And problems with the parts of the women that he didn't really could use or wear.
Sure.
But, Yeah. Otherwise, he was very respectful of women.
He was.
Yeah. And especially of his mother, because she just hammered into his head that if he was not in her immediate presence, he was not safe at all, especially from the temptations of women. Mm. And every woman, other than Augusta, was painted to be a wicked, tainted creature. And
right.
somehow, I don't know how Augusta came upon this conclusion, but she decided that all of the ills of the world could be blamed on the hussies on the streets of Plainfield.
Yeah, I mean, did she think that girls were just throwing themselves at young Ed? Is that what she imagined?
Just staring at his feet, playing with his pocket, just going like, you know, I don't know what to say. I just think skeletons are fun little playing blocks. You know, I don't know why I even think that, you know?
Oh,
will you
Ed.
Be my friend?
I want to be your friend, Ed.
Boy, Texas Pete is a sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. It's what people gather around, it's generosity in its simplest form, and it's a swagger people have who know what's good. Each Texas Pete hot sauce is packed with bold, balanced flavor. This signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. It's been at the center of dinner tables since 1929 and is still heating things up today. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. The hotter hot sauce is three times hotter than the original, and not for the faint of heart. Sabor by Texas Pete adds authentic Mexican flavor, and their dust dry seasoning matches the flavor of the original hot sauce and a flavorful dry rub. Tell you what, the other day I was having myself a good old refried bean burrito, and I wanted a little bit of kick to my morning, so I got myself some Texas Pete sriracha sauce, and I smothered those refried beans and that cheese and them eggs in a whole bunch of and it started off my day correct. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And use the promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com.
The only acceptable reason to interrupt a podcast? Your dog. That was your dog saying thank you for BarkBox. You can take a minute now. You pet your dog. You're going to learn about Bark. It's the company dedicated to making dogs happy. Yay! Every month, BarkBox designs and delivers a whole new collection of toys and treats just for your best bud. No, Wendy, I can't get you a whip. You're too cute for weapons. Every treat is made with yummy, healthy, all-natural ingredients like pumpkin and sweet potato. Mmm, tubers. My dogs love their toys selectively. But BarkBox sends good little ones for their little tiny mouths. They have little mouths, but strong, big spirits. So they fight over the little toys. I imagine they think that they are hunting and going after little bugs and rats. And oh, they love their life and they love them. They love what BarkBox brings, because BarkBox brings the bark and puts it in a box. Yep. To get your free upgrade, go to BarkBox.com/LEFT. One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
So when rain made it impossible to work the farm, Augusta would gather her sons around her old rocking chair and read from her Bible. One of her favorite verses was from Proverbs, but this one she didn't need to read because she knew it by heart. Mm. And this, I think, sums up pretty much everything you need to know about Augusta Gein. The lips of a strange woman drop honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her latter end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Now, therefore, my sons, hearken unto me, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. For why shouldest thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? What, my son? And what, O son of my womb? And what, O son of my vows? Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings.
Mm. And now this comes from chapter 4 of the book of Sexless Nerds.
Yes, 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 yes. And of course, the reason she loved that passage so much is George ate her out one time and came up and said, "Oh, that tastes like great bitter wormwood." I love that.
Your bitter pussy tastes like wormwood.
No, yeah. Love that wormwood.
I put some wormwood in there.
Oh, yeah, good.
I wanted it to taste bad so you wouldn't get a liking for my labia.
Oh, my God. I got. Why do I want to see his mother's vagina so bad? I just have to know.
I'm thinking about it. Oh. Now it's like pictured in my head.
Yeah, it's so bad.
And after she would recite this passage, she'd sit her boys down and instruct him in the ways of masturbation. She'd just tell him, like, over and over again, like, just masturbate, just masturbate. The sins of Onan are preferable to the sins of the foul women.
So, Mom, is this technically, are we having the talk? Is this the talk?
We have the talk every night.
Oh, okay. Oh, these poor, awkward, poor Henry, too.
Oh.
You know, we forget about the older brother in all of this. He was just like, what the fuck is happening?
I just straight up believe that Henry just never spoke.
No, I don't think that he did. I really don't think he did. Between drunken George and crazy Augusta, Henry was a rockin' hard place.
And
here,
speaking of George, he would meet the end of his ultimately pointless and miserable existence.
Killed in a hunting accident?
Oh, no. Died just drinking himself to death.
All right. That's the fourth way to die in Wisconsin.
It was said by locals that he died with a smile on his face. And this is amazing. When George Gein died, Henry was 38. Right. And Ed was 34.
And she was, now, was the mother still reading them these chapters from the Bible at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
They would literally sit like little boys next to her while she read from the Bible to them every single night.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the idea makes me hard. This whole situation makes me sexually aroused.
Yes. Well, we know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just not cool. You know what I mean?
I mean, you're nearing 40 years old, and you're just like, Mommy, is it time for story time tonight again?
Yeah, you know, it's like terrifying. When you meet like a 38-year-old DJ who like works at a club and stuff, and a part of you, it's like, grow up and get a real job. This is a 38-year-old man who sits on his mother's knee while she reads from the Bible.
And teaches him the ways of masturbation.
Mm-hmm. And remember, this house, no electricity, no indoor plumbing.
It does sound so fun, though. Can we go camping? I want to get out of here.
Yeah, camping is just sit in your room watching your father struggle to make it to your fucking huge mother through the rickety walls. Can I ask an honest question? Because I was thinking about this while I was reading this, of course, and not sexually, not like masturbatory in a way. Do you think that she molested them?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, other than mentally and Yeah, she molested him in a way.
Mentally raped them, yes.
Sorry, I meant to say, did she molest them?
Oh, molestation. She molested them.
I just wonder, because when she said that she taught him the ways of masturbation, I was just like, and this is the way you do it. You got to pull on it. You got to pull on it.
I bet you that she did. No, I'm sure she did.
It's possible. Isolated.
Yeah, of course. She probably watched him. She probably made him do it in front of him.
So when George died, Eddie picked up what little slack there was to pick up by taking on various odd jobs as a handyman. He also became kind of a babysitter for local kids.
I will say, this is kind of a good thing that George was a raging alcoholic, because when you do die, your child has to take all your responsibilities on. But Ed's like, oh, he didn't do nothing.
Yeah.
So I just have to sit on the couch for 3 hours a day now, more.
Who in their right fucking mind would choose the guy with the saggy eye who's always half retardedly smiling? Like, what would possess you to ask him to be babysitter of your children?
Oh, come on. He's a loving guy.
Yeah, a bit of an oddball. Now, that is the adjective that comes up over and over and over again with Ed Gein. Bit of an oddball.
Yeah, he was a bit of an oddball. No,
he was. It's playing field.
But he was good with kids. He was great with kids. He would roughhouse with the boys. He'd do magic tricks for the girls.
Yeah.
And he'd tell them creepy tales of headhunters and cannibals.
I would say if I was a 7-year-old boy, I would love when Ed came over.
He would be my best friend.
Yeah.
Like, I would love him.
There's certain things. Well, it's also, this is during his time period when he became obsessed with adventure magazines.
Yeah.
Mm. Which was at the time basically rape stories.
Not all of them.
Like a lot of them. So is the Bible. So.
Yeah. A few of them. So now that he was grown up, he could relate to kids, but of course, adults could not relate to whatsoever. Right. He was considered a good neighbor, but soft spoken, a little foolish. But overall, polite and decent. The only person who had a bad thing to say about Ed Gein was the local barber who described Ed, who admittedly cut his own hair.
Yeah.
He described him as, quote, a filthy thing.
It was also really rough when he started wearing those belly buttons as earrings. That was really hard on the neighborhood.
Right. But this barber needs to keep his mouth shut. The barber is like a priest. What is said in a barber shop should be kept quiet and it should be secret.
Ed said Ed would always come and help. Like, if you ever ask Ed to come to work on your farm, he would come help. And he said, like, one characteristic about him is that while he looked very slight and soft, he was incredibly strong.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a part of, I guess, just farm life. I don't know. Yeah. I grew up in the fucking bustling cities in New York City, so all I had a sharp mind and quick feet, and I had a fucking graffiti tag my way across the bit-bopping boroughs.
No, it's farm life. I could beat you to death, Henry.
Yeah.
Like, easily.
I know.
You described the movie The Warriors, Henry. Your life was not like that. You're a bit more like a George Gein, but without any alcohol.
Oh, I got booze.
Mm-hmm. So, Ed, his relationship with Henry, pretty good. He got along with his brother for the most part. Henry, definitely a little more independent than Ed, but Ed looked up to Henry because Henry actually got a job outside of the Gein farmstead. He oversaw a crew of Jamaicans on a public works project, and for some reason, Ed considered that to be the highest achievement.
And how hasn't that been a major motion picture? The Jamaican construction crew working in Plainfield, Wisconsin. Those poor men who had to go talk about culture shock.
Yeah, in 1952.
All right, what we're going to do, it's about Jamaican, Wisconsin construction workers. We're looking at, it's like a cross between Cool Runnings and 12 Years a Slave.
Okay, perfect. I would love to hear the Jamaican story of what they thought of the white culture of Plainfield.
They
probably just kept silent and looked around and was like,
is there a safe place where we can talk? Because everybody's in the woods. They always hiding out in the woods. They dress like deer, man. They dress up like deer. You can't tell who's white and who's just a deer, man.
I agree with that. It's crazy out there.
There was only one thing that Henry and Ed disagreed on, and that was Augusta. And it took a
baffling amount of years for Henry to bring up that maybe Ed was a little too close to his mother.
I feel like Henry was very sensitive about the issue. You know, Henry wasn't like, oh, Augusta's a crazy wench woman who's holding you back and is the reason for your mental retardation. He's like, maybe you just spent, maybe take an hour away. Just an hour apart.
Because he probably, because Henry seems like he's like sort of normal. And he's looking at himself just being like, I need to be normal. I need to figure out how to fix my life. And then he's looking at Ed, and Ed's really, really not normal.
He loves
Ed. Ed is like the actual thing of an oddball, which is when you're up close to an oddball and you realize, oh, he's a total deviant and fucking psychopath.
It's like Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise. They were both Scientologists, but eventually Nicole Kidman woke up, and then Tom Cruise is Ed Gein.
But it's he should play him in a movie.
He should.
That's the movie I want to see, just Ed Gein.
Ted Cruz is... Tom Cruise is Ed Gein.
I'm all ripped.
You want to do like the Eileen Wuornos, Charlize Theron thing?
Oh, yeah.
We try to make her ugly, but she's still pretty hot.
Yeah, still hot,
still banging body, And it's just him just like still having sex with like Penelope Cruz like out in the field, but then, you know.
I hate it. I hate Hollywood. I hate that Hollywood does that. Eileen should have been played by a real ugly woman who understood what it was like to be an ugly gal abused by men.
Well, you don't understand. I mean, in Los Angeles, they take ugly women and they put them into camps and they gas them. This is what happens in Los Angeles.
You would know.
It's a cruel place.
I believe you.
So Henry, he actually didn't criticize Augusta in the least bit, but there was an implication there that if Ed was spending a little bit too much time with Augusta, then Augusta might be wrong.
And you know, Ed thought about this for like... I mean, this was the thing he was thinking about for weeks.
Yeah. He just, I mean, and possibly even years. Because 3 years after George's death, because after George died, that's when Henry, that's when he started to think, okay, maybe this isn't the best thing for me. And who knows?
He may have stuck around.
Right.
Because he definitely thought about it. Because they said during this time period, he went on the only trip that he had ever went on in his life to go sign up for the army. And he was trying to figure out what he could do, and they were like, "You can't take you in the fucking army. Who are you? Get the hell out!" As soon as he showed up, he's like, "I'd like to be in the army because I think it'd be fun to have a gun." And they're like, "No,
absolutely not.
Just go. Just get the hell out of here." Yeah. But so he knew that things were a little unusual in the house.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can't go try to join the army when you call a bayonet a butter knife. And he definitely this was. No one was going to take him.
Yeah.
So when Augusta yells at him and tells him that nobody wants him, she's not lying.
Well, she's made him that way.
Well,
she's, yeah, she has made him unlovable, essentially, by anybody except for her. And he doesn't really want to be loved by anyone except her. His entire world revolved around Augusta, and the only love that he wanted in this world was the love of his mother.
Yeah.
And 3 years after George's death, Henry Gein would be dead as well. And this is a matter of speculation, huge speculation, probably the biggest matter of speculation surrounding Ed Gein, that he may have actually killed Henry.
I'm just going to start a little whisper campaign right now. He did it.
He may have done it. I think there's a strong possibility that he did it.
He may have also been killed by the elements while fighting a runaway brush fire.
Yeah, but then they found him, and he had no burn marks on him, and his clothes were completely fine, and he was choked to death.
Okay.
That was the thing. They found him, and they said that maybe the fumes from the fire had caused him to asphyxiate, but it was just like Ed who found him. Ed was the only one with him.
Right.
He went out and, you know, like, he was like, oh, like he did the thing where he saw Ed Henry choke, and he was like, help. Ooh, somebody help. Like, quietly to himself, like, better call 911.
Oh,
help.
Yeah. Help.
My brother's dying. Help.
Yep.
Help. Until he was good and dead, and then he ran and got help.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, this would require Henry to be like, I like to go down to fires and just take a deep breath. I mean, because he never caught fire.
Well, they were fighting fires from both sides. You know, they were trying, it was on their land, they were trying to save it. And Ed, he said his version of the story is that they split up, he went back to find Henry, couldn't find him because darkness was starting to fall. He went back to town, but when he brought authorities back out, he was able to go straight to Henry's body.
See, that he wasn't creative enough to, like, stumble upon it.
Yeah,
just kind of fake it.
No, and when they asked him, like how he was able to lead him straight to the body, he just kind of shrugged and said, "Funny how that works."
What work? Please,
it's not funny how it works, Ed. There's nothing funny about it. It's your brother. He's dead.
It's a funny. That is a funny joke, Ed. That is
it
a funny.
It is funny, isn't it? That,
cops
funny how that works.
I just don't think the police arrested murderers until 1998. You could do whatever you wanted back then.
They used the Robert Durst explanation for many years of just being like, he had his reasons.
Yeah. Well, they weren't big on investigation for a really long time.
No.
Like, it was just because they thought, like, you know what? There's no way that, you know, little old meek Eddie Gein could hurt anybody, much less kill him.
He had also been known in town for having an extreme aversion to violence.
Yeah.
That he wouldn't even go hunting, which is like a fucking very weird thing in Wisconsin, especially in that community where everybody went fucking hunting.
Everybody.
They actually called him, I forgot about this nickname they called him, Eddie's just another weak acting Casper Milktoast.
Yeah, which is that's a very, very high insult. Oh, that's an insult in the highest degree in Wisconsin.
So Casper, are they talking about Casper, Wyoming?
No, Casper the ghost.
Oh.
Little scaredy cat.
Oh,
okay. Scaredy ghost.
I think this is before Casper the
Ghost. No, Casper the Ghost was around in the early 1900s.
I don't think you know your comic book history that
oh,
well.
Oh, I know my history.
You just like funny things that look like globs of semen.
I laugh at a lot of strange globular things.
So, Ed, finally, after all of these years, he finally had his mother all to himself.
Oh.
It was just Ed and Augusta in the house, but the domestic bliss wouldn't last, for soon after Henry's death, Augusta would fall victim to a stroke.
Oh, my God.
She would be in and out of the hospital for a few months, and Ed finally tending to her every need. He was finally able to just have her completely in his control.
Can I read her favorite Bible passage that he would have him read to her while she was on her deathbed?
Yes.
Thank you. O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in thy hot displeasure. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. My soul is also sorely vexed. But thou, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver my soul. O save me for thy mercy's sake. For in death there is no remembrance of thee. In the grave who shall give me thanks? I'm weary with my groaning. All the night make I my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears. Mine eyes is consumed because of grief. It waxeth old because of all mine enemies. Depart from me, all ye workers of iniquity. For the Lord hath heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord hath heard my supplication. The Lord will receive my prayer.
I love it. It sounds like Prince of Nottingham from Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Or King of Nottingham.
A little bit of Rael in there.
Yeah, great. I love that. Very fun.
So Ed was able to tend to her every single need, but her end would come in the winter of 1945, a week before her death. This is the trigger, mind you. This is the trigger for Augusta's death. Ed traveled to the farm of a man named Bill Smith to buy a little bit of straw. Augusta, she's still on the mend from her first stroke, but she had absolutely no faith in her son as a negotiator, so she came along, of course.
Ugh.
They drove up to the house, and they found Bill beating a dog on the front porch, arguing with a woman that he'd been shacking up with.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he wasn't married. He was just shacking up.
Look at that.
And the man eventually just beat the dog to death while the woman wept and screamed. Pretty traumatic type of a situation. The death of the dog, Augusta could not give less of a fuck. It was the mere sight of this so-called harlot that upset her the most. She just ranted and raved about the sin of these two for a full day and night, would not stop talking about, and completely exhausted herself. And just a few days later, she dropped dead of a second stroke, killed by her own judgmental nature.
Thank God. And, you know, it's funny because she had a stroke. She was like, oh, whore, harlot. You know, half of her face is going south. It's terrible. That was the close to the most boring story setup of all time, where Ed Gein went down to Bill Smith's house to buy some grain. That's like a Wisconsin tale. Oh, my God.
Well, let me tell you something about old Ed Gein. One day, he was going to Bill Smith's house.
Yeah.
Turns out Eddie needed to buy a little bit of straw.
Oh, my God. That is just one of the darndest things I ever heard.
He's absolutely sinister. I'll tell you that, going to buy straw. That's something sinister I've never heard. Who needs straw when you're living on a farm? Straw's fucking everywhere.
Think about it.
And of course, Augusta, her obituary, I think, sums up the feelings that the townsfolk had for this woman
right.
perfectly. Like,
Miss Augusta Gein died at the Wild Rose Hospital on December 29th of a cerebral brain hemorrhage. The body was brought to the Gault Funeral Home, where services were held December 31st. Reverend C.H. Wise officiating. She is survived by one son, that fucking weird guy, Eddie, who lives in the home farm southwest of here.
Wild Rose. Wild Rose. That's a fun hospital to go to. Go down to the old Wild Rose.
And a real shitty way to spend New Year's Eve as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And the only people to show up to her funeral were a couple of her family members, specifically her two brothers, who were also unmarried.
Oh,
that is a fun little thing that makes everybody totally isolated and weird.
Yes, I would have loved to see this funeral.
And of course, Ed was there, inconsolable, weeping uncontrollably, his face just covered with tears and snot.
Bet you he feels bad about killing his only family now.
And he told the congregation she was too good, just too good for all that suffering.
Oh, he did. He loved his mom so much.
Yeah, and after
I just feel bad.
And after a local woman tried to console him, saying she was finally at peace, he said, "Yep,
she's truly at peace. Now I'm alone. I'm truly alone in the world."
What a cry for Ed!
But then, first of all, it's like, while you're trying to offer solace, you're like, "Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, sure, yes. I'm just trying to say, feel better. I know." By you being just, you're weird, man.
Yeah, I mean, he's weird. But I'm sure, I mean, he had to embrace a woman very aggressively and hold her far too long at some point during these services and then realized that ain't Ma. Yeah.
So after Mama died, Eddie Gein's free to live a bachelor life, and then he found a girlfriend, and then they shacked up, and everything was totally cool, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love the way this story ends. He says, "I'm finally free. I'm finally free." He got a beautiful
gal. Yeah, and then it turns into Entourage, right, where it's him hanging out with Jeremy Piven, and they go to Vegas, and you got Johnny Vegas and Billy Vegas and the guy named like Tony Cleveland.
Yeah.
They're all hanging out with Sasha Gray.
The weirdest thing is Tony Cleveland's the only one from Vegas, which is kind of one of those bizarre, kind of a fun little thing.
This is when things got really fucked up for him.
This is where Ed Gein's entire life falls apart. He has no family members to control him whatsoever. And this is a man, it's like if you were in solitary confinement for 20 years and you get thrown out into the middle of, the middle of some random metropolis and you're just left to fend for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also say this is the perfect example of the idle hands are the devil's tools.
Right.
That's kind of what this is all about.
Yeah,
you could say the whole story is about, like, we could still say, Ed Gein, please get a hobby.
But
what he did.
Different hobby. Get a different hobby.
Yeah, idle hands are the devil's tools, but unless you use hands, did he use the hands as hammers ever?
I don't think he can.
That would be kind of fun.
It's too fleshy.
Oh, okay.
It'll just pass right through that. I've put my hand through a hammer before, or a hand through a nail before.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you did construction all wrong. Marcus worked
on that's why you never made it in that business.
Yeah, Marcus did construction for one day, but he brought no tools. He's like, I know what I'm doing.
And he went straight from Texas, and he was going like, hey, look, I brought my own damn hammers. And the best part about these hammers, that they're also screwdrivers, and also help me drink my beer.
All right, so that's Ed Gein part one. Obviously, part two is coming up next. What a great Wisconsin tale. Very, very interesting. Again, if you are, I don't know, wanting to dig up graves and make nipple belts and things like that, don't even bother. You can just go on Etsy.
Yeah.
And buy your own nipple belt. It's already been made for you.
I mean, really, if Ed would have had the internet, none of this would have happened.
I think the internet has saved a lot of lives.
I really do think it has. Yeah. They can outrage.
Yeah, because you could have just bought some fake skeletons and had them around the house.
Yeah, or absolutely. He could have made his whole macabre house, and it would have been really fun. It would have been a great haunted house during the Halloween season. Oh, everyone would have loved to go over there and visit the old Gein house.
No, he could just go.
Ed could have been hugged a couple of more times. Yeah. I think, you know, that this is one of those cases where he could have been hugged a little bit more.
Well, I think he was hugged after his mother berated him and made him cry, and then it was very bizarre affection, you know.
Back and forth, yeah.
Which is the old seesaw that creates a killer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's see here. Let's do, I'm going to do a hail yourselves. Thank you guys so much for listening. And make sure to follow Marcus Parks on Twitter, and that's Henry Loves You on Twitter. I'm at Ben Kissel. And, of course, last podcast on the left, LP on the left on Twitter.
Hail sweet Satan. You're always there when I need you. Like, I was so hungry on set yesterday, and I was like, please, Satan, will you feed what I need? They had burritos at the crafty table.
So that's craft services coming through there in the big production.
Sweet Satan.
One more thing is go to iTunes and rate and review if you haven't done so already, and go to cavecomedyradio.com/LP or Last Podcast on the Left and get your very own Last Podcast on the Left t-shirt.
And Henry, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about how the shoot's going? How's everything in Toronto with you?
Top secret.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for sharing.
It's fucking great.
Okay.
I don't know how to say it. I'm living a nerd's wet dream right now.
Awesome.
I do have a message to give. Christopher Russo wants to say to Anos Sionis that he loves you and you were right. And he wants you to come home.
Wow, isn't that something? And thank you guys so much for supporting the shows that Marcus and I do as well here on CCR. We had three in the top 200, you know, past week or so on iTunes. So that really means a lot to all of us.
Yeah, we're really choking the airwaves with our thick fucking cocks.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So we can actually fully say Hail Gein today.
Yeah!
Oh, wow! Hail Gein!
Yeah, yeah!
Wow!
Fully and completely.
Yes.
All right. And hail me as well.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.
At Founders Brewing Company, we set out to create a beer that lets you embrace the unconventional. Mortal Bloom is a radiantly beautiful, hazy IPA that will wrap your taste buds with intense citrus and tropical notes of pineapple and mango. Coming in at 6.2% ABV with big aromatics and no bitterness, it's the perfect beer, if we do say so ourselves. Visit foundersbrewing.com to find Mortal Bloom Hazy IPA.